Hi, I'm your co-host, James White, and this is the Solution Series. And once again, I am joined by the founder and editor of Corey'sDigs.com, Corey Lynn. Corey, it's great to be with you once again on the Solution Series.
Great to be here. This is going to be a good one.
We have a something we're going to talk about today, folks, is important to everyone because everyone has to use money, which it's currency, really. It's not real money, but we're going to get into that here in a minute with our guest, Franklin Sanders. Let me give him a proper introduction. Born in Arkansas, Franklin Sanders grew up in Memphis and graduated from Rhodes College. After 2 years in the U.S. Army and attended graduate school at Tulane and the Free University of Berlin. In 1980, Mr. Sanders opened a gold and silver brokerage and began publishing his monthly newsletter, The Money Changer. Since 2001, he has published a daily gold and silver market commentary on the internet. He has written or co-authored several books. In 1993, Mr. Sanders wrote for Jim Blanchard, At Home in Dagwood Mudhole, in 3 volumes. In 1999, he and his wife, Susan, moved with their 7 children to a farm near West Point, where they raised grass-fed cattle, sheep, and pastured pigs. With 2 of his sons, he still brokers gold and silver and specializes in swapping strategies for precious metals. He and his present wife, Nancy, live in West Point. Franklin Sanders, thanks so much for joining us here on the Solution Series.
My pleasure.
Hope I didn't mess that bio up too bad there. That's my weakest area is reading those darn bios. I don't know why. I just don't do well at them. Anyway, it's great to have you here.
One little mistake. The book in 1991 was Silver Bonanza, How You Can Profit from the Coming Rise in Silver, Coming Bull Market in Silver.
Right on. I stand corrected. Thank you very much for that. It's great to have you here today with Corey Lynn and myself. And we're going to talk about precious metals. We're going to talk about gold and silver. We're going to talk about what real money is, Federal Reserve notes, fiat currency, and everything else. And what a scam, I have to say. I just want to start off by saying I've been railing against the Federal Reserve and this whole fiat currency system for a long time. Franklin, I'd be interested to see hear what your thoughts are on just the state of things right now financially. The Fed, crying out loud, their consortium of foreign banks. I don't believe they have our best interest at heart, but we can get into that during the interview. I'll turn it over to you, Franklin Sanders.
Okay, well, I've been dealing with this I've been in business 42 years. So I've been dealing with the money issue maybe nearly 50 years. And the thing that I noticed in the beginning, in the late 60s, was whenever you talk to anybody about money, it's so bizarre. The truth is so bizarre that people couldn't believe you. They couldn't believe you. If you tell people, look, the federal government in 1913 handed over to a private corporation, the Federal Reserve, the power to print money out of thin air, turned over control of the economy to this private corporation, people say, oh, no, that's crazy. That can't be true. But that's exactly what happened. I'm not exaggerating a bit. That's exactly what happened. In 1933 and 34, they took gold out of the, they made it a crime for you to own gold. That was done illegally. And then in 1967 and 68, they repudiated the silver certificates. So there's no gold or silver money, even though we have, according to the U.S. Constitution, a right to gold and silver money. According to the Constitution, no state can make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Well, you know, and I know that doesn't prevail anywhere in the United States. So it's all like being in Never Never Land when you start dealing with money. It's just crazy.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I know you guys have been working on some legislation there in Tennessee, and I was just pulling up an alert by the John Birch Society talking about how states should enact an escrow law and nullify the Federal Reserve. And I didn't even realize they say that 42 states have abolished or curtailed sales tax on precious metals, such as gold and silver, which is a good step in the right direction, but that we need to get it set as, so they say Oklahoma, Utah, and Wyoming have explicitly reaffirmed the validity of gold and silver as legal tender, further encouraging their use in competition with Federal Reserve notes. So what is your thought on this, and where are you at in Tennessee with that?
Okay, Tennessee just on the 27th of May of this year removed the federal, removed the sales tax on gold and silver.
Okay.
And not to dwell on it, but I spent
years,
20 years fighting the sales tax, went to jail over the issue. I mean,
wow.
Here's the thing. They never started taxing gold money and silver money until about 1980, when there was that big surge in the gold and silver markets, and states all of a sudden figured, hey, there's a place we can bleed off some money. Well, here's why I say it's not taxable. A sales tax is a tax on a transfer of personal property.
Right.
Gold and silver are money. That's not personal property. If you go to the bank and you give them a $100 bill and say, I'd like to have 5 20s for this, they don't give you 4 20s less sales tax.
Right.
That's exactly the same thing. Well, so over the course of it's about the last 15 years, 42 states have removed that tax. Now, how does that happen? You need to know your state legislators. Listen, you have good state legislators. You just have to find them. Ours are way better than anybody in Washington, D.C. And once you find them, you'll find people who are devoted to freedom, who are devoted to sound money, and they will work with you. And you can go to a group like the Sound Money Defense League, and you can get model state legislation from them. I sent you a copy of a model legal tender law, which you mentioned.
I just showed that on the screen. I just showed that on the screen while you were talking, so people have seen that.
Yeah. So what that does is that's the ideal right there. And that would say, hey, if it's gold or silver, foreign coin or American coin, it's legal tender, even bars. And the state treasurer, because there's so much confusion, because the Federal Reserve has made the federal government has made Federal Reserve notes, paper bills, backed by nothing but credit debt. They've made silver coin, gold coin in two different types. They've made platinum coins. There's all this confusion. So what that bill calls for is for the state treasurer to publish daily the exchange rate amongst those things. It's not that hard to do. I mean, if you lived on the border between Canada and the United States, and you shop sometimes in Canada and sometimes in the United States, you figure out what the exchange rate is. It's not that difficult to live with. People act like this is the worst algebra problem they've ever seen in their lives. It's not.
No, it's not. It's not. It's a simple math problem. Well, you know, talking about precious metals and people in, you know, for future considerations as far as protecting the wealth that you have, and that really is what precious metals does, is it sort of protects, you know, your wealth, because it's never going to go to zero. Like, I don't know how many hundreds of fiat currencies have done throughout history. But what do you get into, Franklin? Do you get, you know, I've always been in my studies, stay away from the derivatives, stay away from, you know, the paper silver and the paper gold. It's always better to hold physical gold and silver in your hand. And my follow-up question to that, is it better to hold in the safe at your house? There's off-site locations I know that will house your precious metals for you. What strategically is the best option for the people that would be listening to this podcast? Maybe you do recommend paper silver. I don't know. I don't speak for you. I'm going to go ahead and have you address that if you don't mind.
No, I don't. I don't like any kind of paper silver. I don't like the exchange traded funds, SLV and GLD. If you go to your stockbroker and you say, I want to buy gold and silver, he's going to put you in those exchange traded funds. That's not what you want. Gold and silver are the ultimate cash, the ultimate cash. They have no counterparty risks like a bond does or stock does. They're good because people want them. They're the ultimate cash, so you want possession of them. And the best place to keep them is where you've got 24-hour access. Now, maybe that's a safe in your house that you conceal using concealment construction, or maybe that's a safe that your lawyer has, or it's not a bank deposit safe deposit box. I mean, I'd like to make that point, because banks now, especially out on the West Coast, if you read the contract when you rent a safe deposit box, it's horrifying. You can't keep cash in there. You can't keep silver and gold, all this other stuff. So that's not the place to go. Besides that, in the event of an emergency, when you need that gold and silver, that bank's going to be closed. They'll close the bank.
Can I follow up with that really quick? Sorry to interrupt you, but as we're doing this podcast right now, it's just been revealed that the FBI in California stole $86 million out of safe deposit boxes because they misrepresented their case to the judge. $86 million they took these people's. They robbed literally the bank.
Right. And that's that's one of the dangers with private storage. There are all kinds of depositories. That was a private depository. It was private storage, safe storage out in California that you're talking about. But there are private depositories too. There's IDS of Delaware, IDS of Texas, CNT in Bridgewater, Massachusetts, and several others. And if you just have a whole lot of gold and silver, probably you're going to end up having to use a depository. And that puts you in sort of a different class. But the main thing that most people want is to have it where they can get it 24 hours, 7 days a week. And if you're going to buy physical gold and silver, the best thing to buy is coin. Why coin? What is a coin? A coin is a piece of gold or silver of a known weight and fineness. So the content of it is knowable just by recognizing what the coin is. If I see a coin and it's a Kruger and I say, okay, it's got an ounce of gold.
That's right.
I know it. If I see a United States 90% silver dime minted before 65, I know it's got 0.0715 ounces of silver in it. So the purpose of coinage is to facilitate trade, is to make it easy so we don't have to stop what we're doing, weigh the gold and silver to see how much there is. So that's the reason why I tell people, buy in coin if you can. Here's the problem. Since January of 2021, we've had a buying panic going on in gold and silver. Now, when I say a buying panic, what I mean is this. Biden was inaugurated. All of a sudden, everybody decided, hey, I better buy gold and silver. So the door to the market is not that big. It's just not. The physical gold and silver market is small when you compare it to stocks or bonds or anything, like any financial market. So what happens is, the premium rises on all forms of gold and silver. By premium, I mean what you have to pay greater than the silver or gold value of the item, and deliveries stretch out. By that, what I mean is, instead of being able to put in an order, get it shipped to you, everything happens within about 4 weeks, it goes to 8 weeks, it goes to 12 weeks, it goes to 16 weeks before you can get it. And that delay and the rise in premium always affects silver worse than it does gold. And that reason is silver's a lot smaller market. So normally if people come to me and they say that in normal times, when they say, I want to buy silver, I say, great, buy United States 90% silver coin. It's the most divisible, most recognizable form of silver. There's no argument about what it is. That's the best thing to get. The only problem is that today has about a 50% premium over its silver content. In other words, for every dollar's worth of silver that you buy in the form of 90% silver coin, you have to pay $1.50.
Wow.
And they call that junk silver. Don't they call that junk silver? Isn't that the term that they use? And that's kind of a nice.
Just because it has no collector value. It's just circulated coin. Then the United States since 1985 has made a coin called a silver American Eagle. It's just a 1 ounce pure silver coin. That's all it is. Those right now have about a 70% premium. So what I try to tell people is, look, gold is gold. Silver is silver. It doesn't matter what the form is so much as it matters how many ounces you get. So don't pay big high premiums for anything when you can get way more gold or silver by buying, say, 1 ounce privately minted silver rounds. It just doesn't make sense to pay big premiums.
Franklin, I'm sorry, Corey, go ahead.
No, I was just curious what your thoughts are on, I just actually had a friend the other day ask me this, and I said, well, gosh, I don't know, but I'll ask Franklin when I talk to him as far as, well, how much gold do you want to get versus how much silver? What, you know, what do you recommend as far as that goes?
Well, there are a couple of considerations there. First of all, the silver is more useful. It's right. It's more useful in the sense that every day I can use it if I have to. Hang on just a second. Every day I can use it if I have to. The gold, on the other hand, is not as usable. And let me give you an example of what I mean. A 1 ounce gold coin right now is, call it $1,800. Well, how many times have you ever gone shopping with an $1,800 bill?
Right.
You don't. And then how do you get change for it, for heaven's sake?
Right.
So for that reason, I would get a substantial amount of silver. Now, one of the rational ways that we can approach it is to say, well, what's the value of silver in terms of gold? And where is that when we look at it historically? And here's the thing. If I had a chart that was 52 feet long, and every foot on that chart represented one century of human history, for all except about the last foot and a half, the gold-silver ratio would be under 16 to 1. In other words, it would take 16 ounces of silver or less to buy 1 ounce of gold. And it was only after silver was demonetized in the 1870s, and that's a whole other criminal conspiracy story, but it's only since it was demonetized that the ratio ever got over 16 to 1. It has been since that time. In 1941, it went to 100 to 1. In 1991, it went to 101. But in 1980, well, in 1967 and in 1980, it went below 16 to 1. So we get this big panic in 2020. Stock market crashes. Gold and silver spike down, which is predictable. That's what they did in 2008. And then at that point, because silver is more volatile than gold, it moves faster than gold, the ratio went up to 125. It took 100 on the spike.
Yeah.
It took 125 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold. Well, today it's about 88. And it will go down to 16 to 1 again.
That's right.
Before this present bull market is over. But what we try to do, and here's part of the strategy that we offer customers, is what we try to do is to swap between gold and silver. So we don't do it. You don't have to do it a lot. It's not often, but we're in silver now and telling people, buy more silver now than you buy gold. When that ratio goes down to 30 or 32 to 1, we're going to swap that silver for gold. Now, okay, it's a taxable transaction. But the thing is, if you double the amount of ounces you've got, who cares? Pay the tax. You know, it's worth it because it's such a lucrative trade. So that's what we try to do. Gold and silver is just what they call a sterile investment it doesn't pay interest. It doesn't pay dividends. And so it's, what are you going to do with it? Well, you're going to sit there and wait for the price to go up. Well, while you're waiting for the price to go up, if you swap back and forth, you can increase the number of ounces of silver or gold you have. And that makes it a fertile instead of a sterile investment. Now, so the question you asked was, should I buy more gold? Should I buy more silver? I'd say for most people, about 2/3 silver and 1/3 gold. More if you can stand the volatility of silver, because it bounces up and down a lot farther and faster than gold does.
If I can ask you a question about investing, there's two types of ways. Well, probably more than two, but two of the ways people try to time the market, and when they see it go down, they try to buy a bunch of it while they think it's low, or they do dollar cost averaging, where they just put $50 a week, and they buy as much silver as they can buy with $50, no matter what the price is. It's $50 a week or $50 a month or $20 a week, whatever is fits into your budget. That's the dollar cost averaging sort of method. Do you recommend that one? Do you recommend either one, or maybe either or neither?
Well, I think your best bet is to buy gold and silver regularly. And you might do that once a month. You might do it once a quarter, once a week. The problem with that for a lot of people is that they don't have maybe $300, $500, maybe $1,000 they want to put in it at a time. So usually they're going to have to pay a higher price to get it. We Volunteer Precious Metals, which is my son's company, offers a program called Monthly Acquisition Plan or MAP Plan, and that allows people to buy once a month. We pool all the orders once a month, and we can offer a lower price, and we just buy the lowest price thing we can get. But I don't want to leave that question yet, because the problem is that most people now are wrapped up in stocks. They've got an IRA, they got a 401k, mm-hmm. they hold stocks, and they don't think about this. The secret of investing is to align your investments with the primary trend. What is the primary trend? That's the trend that lasts, that starts and lasts for 20 or 25 years. If you chart stocks, say the Dow Jones Industrial Average, valued in gold, in other words, I just take the Dow price and divide it by the price of gold, what you're going to see is that it peaked in August of 1999, and it's gone down ever since. Now it goes up and down, it zigs and zags, but it's headed down again. Between 1999 and 2011, stocks lost their value against gold, 89%. They're going to do that again from where they started at the top of a correction in 2018. So the main thing I would do is I would get it. People say, what percentage ought I to have of my portfolio in silver or gold? I can't tell you that, because I don't know what your risk tolerances are. So what I tell them is buy as much as you can stand and buy it as quickly as you can get it.
I have a question along those lines. So if I understand it correctly, if someone wanted to, say, transfer stocks or from their IRA over to gold that then has to, or silver, and sits in a depository, that alleviates you from paying the taxes on pulling it out. But then when you go to pull the metals out of the depository, you're stuck with having to pay those taxes. And so I'm trying to understand with what we're talking about with legal tender and removing sales taxes and all of that and capital gains, how does that all play into that move of being able to transfer over to the gold and silver?
Right. Well, an IRA is a partnership between you and the United States government, and they're the senior partner, right? They set up the rules. They can change the rules if they want to. Right. But the way they entice you into that is they defer the income taxes on whatever the gains are in that IRA, as long as you leave it in the IRA.
Right.
When you take it out, you can take it out as a distribution in kind. That is, if you got gold and silver, you can take out the gold and silver, but you're going to pay income tax on it, ordinary income tax, if you take it all out. Or when you get to be age 65, you got to take so much out a year. So what's the advantage of having a precious metals IRA? The advantage is you can take money that and put in there, and the gains will be tax deferred until you take them out. Now, that's really important if we do the swapping strategy, because there's no tax every time you swap. But if you have to have an IRA anyway, I'd rather put it into precious metals than to put it into stocks, for the reason that I just mentioned to you, because stocks are in a primary downtrend against precious metals. Did I get lost, Corey, or did I answer your question?
No, that answered my question. Yeah. So my next question is, if people, here's what I'm trying to visualize. So we're in communities. Some are fortunate to have really great communities, some not so much. And people are getting, you know, trying to get their legislators to pass these laws and make recognize gold and silver as legal tender, and even set up depositories, which we can get into that, estate depositories. But now they're buying up silver and gold. And I know that you want people to start seeing that as a regular exchange of money and to start actually, you know, to use it. How do we get to that point? How do we get people to engage in using it and exchanging it and kind of moving forward faster in that direction?
Well, that's the big question, you know, how do we get them to do it? Because there are a lot of barriers. Sales tax are barriers. Capital gains tax is a barrier. The greater difficulty of transaction. I mean, if you charge something on your credit card, you hand the guy the card, he hands it back to you, you sign, and it's done. You don't have to carry anything around with you and so forth. So the problem is that people have to understand, as long as you're using the enemy's money, you're giving him a victory over yourself. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it sounds extreme for me to say the enemy, but the central banks of the world are your enemy.
Oh, yeah.
They are. And they're the enemy of your wealth. And if you keep your money in dollars, you're losing 8, 10, 12% a year in the purchasing power of those dollars. Now, people are going to say, well, the price of gold goes down too. Look what it's done the last month and a half. Or the price of silver goes down too. Yeah, that's true. But if I got an ounce of gold, it's going to be an ounce of gold tomorrow.
Right.
It's not like the dollar, where today I can buy for $1.25, I can buy a gallon of gas, but tomorrow it's going to cost me $3.50. And the fact is, over time, if you stay in dollars, they're stealing from you. That's the whole point.
That's right.
Of inflation.
That's right.
They're stealing from you. And if you keep your wealth in that system, you're strengthening that system. If you don't use at least cash, I mean, every time you use a credit card, any of those payment means, you are strengthening your enemy. Our problem is, how do we get out of it? Because if I put all my money in gold and then I want to go buy groceries, I've got to have something to spend at the grocery store. So we're in this difficult environment where we have to interface between those two systems. And so that's one of the reasons why I want to go to our state legislatures and get all of these barriers to circulation removed. But I mean, the system, the dollar is going to die. The dollar is going to die as the world's reserve currency. And I feel perfectly safe making that statement, and I'll tell you why. Because earlier this year, Joe Biden, when he put those sanctions on Russia, and the Russian central bank couldn't access $3 billion worth of its own reserves, its own money, the message went out, the U.S. dollar is not safe. The U.S. dollar is not safe. Digital assets are not safe. Now, it's not like nobody ever knew that. It's not like the rest of the world.
Yeah, we knew. We
yeah,
knew.
That what happens is the United States inflates and the rest of the world has to grin and bear it.
That's right.
But that central banks have been edging out of dollar reserves since 2015. Since 2015, they spent three times as much on gold reserve for their reserves as they have on U.S. Treasury securities. Now, if it's good for central banks to hold their reserves in gold or silver, why isn't it good for you?
Right.
You see what I'm saying? They know what's going on. And now Russia and China, the BRICS company, but Russia and China especially, are working to set up a new system, an alternative to the dollar as the world's reserve currency. They will succeed. I don't say it'll happen tomorrow. It may not happen next year. It may be 2 years or 3 years. It may be 4 years. But when it happens, it'll happen very suddenly. And it'll create big problems for the United States economy, because we depend on being able to export that inflation. We've done it for, 50 years. So it's 60 years.
Since Bretton Woods, right? Since Bretton Woods.
Yeah, it's longer than that. So 60 years or more. So the dollar is going to go away. And now, as far as hyperinflation in the United States and that sort of thing, I don't know that could happen. People say, well, God, I just can't imagine that happening. We've got the strongest economy in the world. Mm-hmm. How could that possibly happen? Well, go back to Germany in 1918. They had the strongest economy in the world. But the government started doing exactly the same thing that the Federal Reserve and the federal government are doing now. The Federal Reserve is monetizing U.S. government debt. Now, technically, they're not directly doing that, but they are doing that. That's exactly what they're doing. And whenever that happens, you can go back in history. Whenever that happens, it's the beginning of the end for a national currency, because it's so easy to do. It's so easy for the government to finance itself that way. They get hooked on it, and that's the end. And doing that in the last, since 2008, so what's that? That's 14 years. They've taken the United States, the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve, which is a measure, the assets on the balance sheet is a measure of how much money they've created. They've taken it from under $1 trillion to over $9 trillion today. And most of that increase has come in the last 3 years.
Well, they stopped publishing the M3 money supply, I don't know how many years ago. They did. Yeah, they just stopped publishing it because it was getting out. I mean, it would expose their fraud. Now, here's a question for you. There's one of the things that we don't have the advantage over the Fed, who's buying up a bunch of gold and silver. I think the average person, the average, the sheep or whatever, the slaves, what they want to consider us. We have to worry about confiscation, or at least that's something that people worry about, is them coming to do gold confiscation or confiscating your precious metals. Is that something that you think that, because I know that may be something, a stumbling block for some folks to want to hold it personally. Is that something that you think we have to worry about, actual confiscation of these assets?
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
There's a threat, and there's certainly the desire on the part of a large group of people in the government, a lot of politicians, to confiscate firearms.
That's right.
Are you going to not buy a gun because you're afraid they're going to confiscate? Because what's going to happen if they do confiscate? Are they going to send their jackboots around to every house in the country to collect their guns? How many people are going to say, yeah, I've
come on in. Guns.
Yeah, yeah. Let's have some tea. Take my gun.
And it's the same way with gold and silver. In the first place, people are analogizing back to 1933 and 34.
That's right.
This is not 1933-34. In 1933, gold was the basis of the money. Even the Federal Reserve was required to keep about a 35% reserve of gold. So what they were trying to do then was, they were trying to forestall, prevent a run on the banks. So they took the gold out from behind the dollar. And even then, nobody knows how much gold was actually turned in, because a lot of people did not turn in their gold.
That's right.
Today it's different. That gold is not the basis of the money. The basis of the money today is debt. It's debt. It's either government debt or private debt, but it's debt. And if there's any big pile of assets anywhere, it's in IRAs and 401ks. So, when they ask a famous bank robber, why do you rob banks? His answer was, because that's where the money
is. That's where the money is. That's
why
right.
Why did the government confiscate gold in 1933 and 34? Because that's where the money was. Well, today, the money's in IRAs and 401ks. So you better be more worried about your IRAs and 401ks than anything else.
Brilliant point. That's a brilliant point. That it really is a brilliant analogy to pull those two things together. I appreciate that.
Another thing is, a lot of people who sell gold and silver want you to buy expensive numismatic coins, collector coins, and they say, "Hey, these weren't confiscated before, when they confiscated in 1933 and 34. These coins weren't confiscated." Yes, they were. Those are exactly the coins that were confiscated. But anyway, the government's not logical. They're not they're not obliged to be consistent about anything. So, right. Well, they're not. I mean, right. So my point is, if you bought gold and silver and you think the survival of your family depends on your having that little bit of gold and silver for them to live on, you're not going to turn it in when some government thug comes to your door and says, I want your gold and silver. You're going to look at him and play dumb. If you don't, you might as well put a gun up your head.
What's gold and silver? Right. What are you talking right. about? I don't know what you're talking about. Well, you know, it always seems to go back, Franklin, to the banks. And I know that they're, is it North Dakota or South Dakota that has a state bank where they're sort of outside of the Federal Reserve system? If I remember correctly, I think it's, I may be wrong on that. I think one
there,
state, is
there
it
There is one in North Dakota, okay. But I think isn't there a couple more, Franklin?
That's the only one I know about.
Is that the only one right now? Because yeah. I know that's something you think that we should have state banks as well as depositories. And I believe Texas now has a metals depository. Is that correct?
Texas does have a depository. I think it would be good for states to put at least part of their assets in gold and silver to store them in their own depository in their own state. A state bank, as we talk about it, would be not a bank for, it's not a commercial bank. It's not, that is, it's not for retail customers. It's a bank for banks. It's a bank to help stabilize the state banking system. And the reason local banks are important is because we want local banks to act as intermediaries so that there's somewhere we in our own locality can borrow money. They act as a go-between, an intermediary between people who have money and don't need to spend it now and people who want to borrow money. And that function of credit is very important. It's important to the economy. But the problem with the banking system now is they drain the money out of the locality. They send it off to the New York money market and they invest it there. They invest it in all kinds of things. They create all sorts of bubbles. So that's why Catherine Fitz, for instance, is always talking about know who your banker is. Deal with somebody locally. And if you have a state bank, then that bank could function in an emergency as a bank to banks in the state. And if they had silver and gold themselves, they could issue currency against that. And so could the state.
I'm thinking about the John Birch Society, they had said about enacting an escrow law. They said one way is for state legislators to enact a State Sovereignty and Federal Tax Funds Act, also referred to as an escrow law. Under this law, federal taxes would first be required to go into a special fund controlled by the state government. The state would then calculate the percentage of constitutional federal spending, meaning for purposes specifically enumerated in the U.S. Constitution for the federal government. Then the state would send only that percentage of the funds to the IRS. Depending on specific introduced bill versions, the remaining funds would either go toward state expenditures currently relying on federal funding, thus ensuring the state is financially independent, or be returned to taxpayers. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think that's brilliant, but yeah. I don't think that you're going to find many state legislatures that have the nerve to do that. This is exactly the problem, because they're supposed to be between us and the federal government. The state is supposed to be between us and the federal government, and right. the state is supposed to look out for our rights. Most state legislatures do not operate that way. They depend on the federal government for so much of their financing that they're afraid to say no.
Right. And the problem with that is what I see in my research all the time is in whether it's through schools or the healthcare industry, it doesn't matter. When they're receiving finances from the federal government, they now have to abide by their rules and regulations.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that right there needs to end. I'm curious what your thought. Sorry, did you have something to add?
I was just going to say, my answer to federal government money is all government money comes with a sock in the jaw. Mm-hmm. All government money comes with a sock in the jaw. People think, oh, it's free money. You know, farmers, a lot of farmers I know think, oh, it's free money. You know, they'll give me a subsidy for this, that, and the other. It's not free money. It comes, mm-hmm. all of it comes with strings. And if they give you the money, they're going to tell you what to do with it. It's just that simple.
Right, right. Well, and now they're rolling out pilot programs in some states where they're giving out, I forget what they call it, but they're giving out cash, and it's all to move into the whole basic universal income and get into the digital currencies and to be able to track us. And I'm wondering what your thinking is. So if we were to imagine that, I want to know what your theory would be on if they switch to central bank digital currencies and they eventually say, okay, the dollar no longer has any value, we're doing away with the dollar, everything's moving to central bank digital currencies, where do you see coins coming into play there, silver and metal? Like you go to your grocery store now and they won't accept cash and they're saying they can only do digital currency. So at that point in the game, how do you envision this, some of this playing out?
Okay. Corey, do you know what the one obstacle to a central bank digital currency more than any other is?
What?
It's just the native stubbornness of humanity who says, I'm not going to do that. I want privacy. I'm not going to do that. And it's the same thing, you know, it's the same reason that they can't get all the guns, because too many people say, no, wait a minute, you're not getting my gun. I'm right. holding on to it. And so there's a big backlash to those central bank digital currencies. They mm-hmm. want them. They've been wanting them for more than 10 or 15 years. Yeah. They want them badly. But the problem is, I don't think that they're going to be able to impose them. In the first place, there are a lot of legal problems in the United States. The United States has never repudiated any form of currency since the Articles of Confederation and the Continentals they didn't repudiate those. They paid those out at a reduced rate. But the point I'm trying to make is the United States there are dollars in circulation all over the world. Mm-hmm. Huge, you know, 75% of the paper money, the currency, circulates outside the United States. Outside the mm-hmm. United States.
Wow.
So are they going to just say, okay, no more? What about the Fourth Amendment? You know, they can't just say, well, your money's not going to be any good if you don't turn it in by a certain date. There are going to be so many lawsuits that drive, you know, it'll go from now until the cows come home. So yeah. I don't think they can. I think it's going to be hard. That's not to say they won't try it. But the only thing I can envision is that there would be a gray market, people who refuse to live in it. You know, there are a lot of evangelical Christians, and this is not my theology, but this is the way a lot of them look at it, that if you can't buy or sell except by their, you know, by using what they offer, then that's the mark of the beast. And these people are, I don't think these people are going to go along. I think they're going to say, no, I'm not going to do that. So I think there would be a huge gray market, which would be, in a sense, the best thing could happen for us from the standpoint of gold and silver, because people, this stuff is already money. It's already money. This is why we ought to get used to using it among ourselves. But I actually think that's what would happen. Now, I mean, is the government going to put everybody in jail? That's the problem. When there's such widespread resistance, and it doesn't take 50%, you know, like 5%. You can't hire half of the people to be policemen over the other half. It just doesn't work that way. People, the sanction of the victim is necessary, and that's what the government has in this country. They have the sanction of the victim. So I think there would be a gray market. What people would use for money, I don't know, cigarettes, half pints of whiskey, any of those things.
Right.
You know, they'll use what they want and what they find useful. But when people have to make a living, they're going to figure out a way to do it. they're just going to figure out a way to do it. So I don't think as much as I hate central bank digital currencies, as much as I've written about them, as many turgid articles that I've read about it and reports, I don't think in the end they'll make it work. They may try, and it may be violent. It may be very bad, but I don't think in the end they'll be able to make it work. And that's why I think there'll be an alternative economy. That's what.
On that vein, we'd like to talk about going local here in the Solution Series. And, you know, is it time for communities to come together with a local currency? And I say that in the shadow of, I did an interview with several years back. You remember Bernard von Nothaus? You probably remember Bernard von Nothaus. He actually got arrested, and I don't know actually what state he's in now, but he tried to put out an alternative silver coin, if I remember correctly, and they didn't see too kindly to that. Do you think that is, even though that, in, you know, that notwithstanding, is trying to get a local, get some merchants together and try to get a local currency that would be, you know, shared and recognized by even a community to start off? Is that something that, a direction that, do you think that you can go in, and can they stop you from doing that really technically?
No, they can't stop you from doing that, because you can make it, you can make an arrangement, an agreement, a contract with anybody you want, with any kind of tender you want, any kind of arrangement that you want. But Bernard von Nothaus, there were some things that he did that were, that put him in the way of the government coming after him. He made it easy for him. But there's no reason. This is one of the things I've been trying to do for 15 years, is to encourage people in communities to use gold and silver amongst themselves, you know, to start using it. Like I used to go to my chiropractor, and everybody else was paying $25 or $30 to get an adjustment. I gave him a dollar. It was a silver dollar, but I gave him a dollar and I got the same adjustment. And it's that kind of thing. Just ask people, hey, would you rather me pay you in silver or gold or in this paper? And either that or their community currencies can really be complicated, like the Ithaca hours and that sort of thing. But I think we need to start talking about it in our communities. We need to start trying to develop that some kind of currency that we can use.
I agree. If you were to give people three top tips right now pertaining to metals, what would they be?
My three what? Top tips?
Top tips.
Oh, my three top tips. Well,
we probably already covered some of them.
I probably did, but the main thing is I would put as much of my wealth into silver or gold now as I could. And, you know, I watch the market all the time, and nobody knows which way it's going. I think as long as the Fed keeps pumping up the dollar, pushing the dollar up and raising interest rates, it's going to be hard for gold and silver. There'll probably be some more downside, but I'd still keep accumulating gold and silver, because as I said, eventually the dollar is going to crack. Eventually the Fed is going to crack. And I don't want to get caught into a central bank digital currency where they have control of my wealth. So that, I guess that's the first thing I think about. The second tip is get delivery as soon as you can. Get delivery of silver and gold as soon as you can. And I guess really the third thing, and this would include working with your state legislatures, but it's see about getting sound money introduced in your community. Your state's your community as well, but you need to talk to your friends and neighbors about this too, people in your community, so that they understand why they need gold and silver and how to use it. And that's the reason, Corey, years ago that Catherine Fitz and I put up that website, Silver and Gold and Money, because it enables you to punch in the dollar amount you want to pay, and it tells you how much to pay in silver or gold.
Yeah, that's a brilliant calculator, and we're going to link that. I've also put together a PDF for subscribers that'll have the list of depositories you recommend, as well as the model bill that we showed, and some of the resource links, like to the Sound Money Defense. So they can, because that's a really cool site. I was looking through it, and there's, you know, state-by-state breakdown on there. There's a lot of really good information on there.
Yeah, Stefan Gleason, who found, he's the sort of the angel behind all that. He really knows what he's doing, and he's worked a lot with Dr. Edwin Vieira, and he's got a very sound mind for strategy. And he understands that you have to, when you want to get legislation passed, you have to go from below. You have to get pressure from the grassroots. And he's very, very good at organizing that. Very good.
You know, I've interviewed. Sorry, go ahead.
So anyway, Sound Money Defense League is one place that's one place I'd certainly go to see if I wanted to do something in my state legislature.
Yeah, that's a great resource. What were you going to say, James?
I say I've interviewed Dr. Edwin Vieira several times. He's a brilliant mind, and anybody that's associated with him's got to be a pretty decent fellow. Let me ask you this question, if I can. Here, one of the things, if you remember, several years back, people were taking delivery of gold, and they were drilling into the gold bars, and they were seeing that there was tungsten inside there instead of gold. And I don't know how often that happened, but I know it did happen. As things continue to decline, as you talked about, there is going to come a point where gold and silver are going to go to the moon. They're just going to hit that. They're going to hit that, and they're going to take off. And then the counterfeit operations will probably start kicking in. What's the best way for you to make sure that the silver coins and gold coins you're buying, maybe not now so much because it's not such a hot market, but when it gets hot, you better believe they're going to be getting counterfeits are going to come out. It always happens. What's the best way to protect yourself from buying counterfeit gold and silver? And then when it comes right down to it, you're holding something that's worth a fraction of the value.
Well, first of all, is know your dealer. You know, I mean, we test all the gold that comes through here, and the people wholesalers we deal with do the same thing. The counterfeiting has not been a great problem with most coins. There's been some counterfeiting with high-grade numismatic coins. That'd be U.S. $20, $10, $5 gold pieces minted before 34, because there's a big premium. There's more, the counterfeiter makes more there. There were some 10-ounce gold bars that were tungsten filled, and the reason for tungsten is it's almost the same
molecular weight, right?
Same specific gravity, right? And so that specific gravity test is one way you can tell what you've got. But they make an electronic tester that costs about $900 or $1,000. That's pretty long way to go. But I would say just be careful about what you buy. The gold coins that have been it's the high premium gold coins that have been counterfeited more than anything else. And 10-ounce bars or kilo bars, things like that, most of which you're not gonna have. Silver bars, only once in the past have I ever heard of that they were counterfeited, and those were 100-ounce bars. But there's some tests that you can do. For instance, with 100-ounce silver bars, silver has a very sweet metallic ring when you bump it against itself. So you can take two silver bars and hold them sort of like this and bounce them together, and they'll actually ring. Gold coins, a pure gold coin will not do that. Pure silver bar will. But if a gold coin has alloy in it, like copper or a little bit of copper and silver, when you hold those together on the tip of your finger and you tap it with another coin, it will ring too. And once you've heard, you know, that you've heard the saying, that doesn't ring true. Well, that's where it comes from, because that's one of the, that's kind of a real quick and easy, dirty test to see whether what you've got is counterfeit or not. But there hadn't been much counterfeiting, really. I mean, it's not been a problem for us. There are a few things that you want to watch out for, like some Mexican 50s have been counterfeited. But if you got just a regular old scale, you know, I mean, you get a good scale from O House for $110, $150. And that weight is going to be real exact on most gold coins. And if it's too light, then you got a problem. If it's too heavy, drop it on the countertop, it'll go thud. That's not a gold coin. That's unless it's a 24 karat coin. I mean, if it's like an American Eagle that goes thud or $20 gold piece, that's not a gold coin. But there's not that big a problem with it.
I actually have a quick question on the gold coins, because you mentioned with the silver coins, you talked about the Krugerrand and the 1 ounce coins, and it's easier for exchange. What gold coins do you recommend?
I recommend the cheapest ones. My favorite is that I used to like the Mexican 50s, but they've gotten very expensive now. But the Austrians make a restrike of a 1915 coin, an Austrian 100 Corona. It's the cheapest piece of gold I can sell you, cheaper than a gold bar. And I love them, because the thing is that there's no premium to lose on those. They're about as cheap as they can be. In the fractional coins, this buying panic has driven up the premium on all the, you know, U.S. half, quarter, and 10th ounce, the Maple Leafs, all of those modern issue series. So what we have to do is go to a classic gold coin like a Netherlands 10 guilder or
British sovereigns,
Frank sovereigns, even though they're pretty high too, but that's what we have to do to get something like a reasonable price.
Well, I think we're just coming to the end of the interview here. That was fantastic. That was packed. I brought your website up several times. If you want to give out before we end the interview, Franklin, if you want to give out once again any websites that you want people to be able to go to, any phone numbers or any email addresses that you'd like to give out, right now is a great time to do that.
Okay. Well, my son's precious metals business, they broker silver and gold, is Volunteer Precious Metals. And that's the website is volunteerpreciousmetals.com. The number is 888-661-4093. And if you want to get, I publish a daily commentary on the gold and silver markets almost every day. And you can sign up for that at the-moneychanger.com. That's my website, the-moneychanger.com. You have to put the dash in there, because The Money Changer is a porno site. I don't have anything to do with that. That's not
my Well, that's good to know, my friend.
Over on the right-hand side on the homepage of themoneychanger.com, you'll see a box and a button that says subscribe. If you put your name and your email address in there, then you'll get the commentary every day. And I publish in that wholesale prices on a number of gold and silver items, and those are not available anywhere else in the world that I know of, not on the internet.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. That was a wealth of information. Set my mind straight.
No pun intended. No pun intended. A wealth of information. Franklin Sanders, man, so much appreciate you coming on the broadcast with us today and doing all your great work. A lot of great gems. We can't wait to get this out to the people in the podcast. So thanks so much for being here today. And folks, we want to thank Franklin Sanders. We want to thank the Solution Series and Solari.com for bringing us this podcast. And for my guest, Corey Lynn, I'm your host, James White, for the Solution Series. Saying bye now.